Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on home remedies right after this. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Well, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that's conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks and bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, credit, debt, usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin versus clad coin or currency. And you know that's very true when we're dealing with the banks, the government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of that gold and silver coin over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money versus gold and silver. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good reason. They knew, and they knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for you and I to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew. And they knew full well when they did it back in 1933 that in order to subjugate a free people, they must first take away the people's gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy those property rights. So if you and I intend to regain our rights, our duties, and our capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do just that. It's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, for more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It doesn't cost you anything. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult homesteading. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and send us an email request, or click on to the archives page. The archives page, if you're online, you can download it right there. That's georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page and just download it. Hey, we're talking about home remedies, and there's a book that I'm reviewing here, which is called Natural Home Remedies. It's the Natural Remedies Encyclopedia by Vance Pearl. I rated it about a 1 in 20 book, 600 pages, 8.5 by 11. It's $85, worth every penny, worth every penny. Here's why. There's 500 remedies in here, and if at any time, for any cause or reason, you get into a bind, and you know, this isn't a pitch, you know, to get you to change from allopathic to homeopathic or something like that. You may go to your doctor, and your doctor may offer you a regime or a regimen, and perhaps you're unemployed and your health insurance has run out, and you don't have the options available to you to treat the malady that you're facing. Well, keep this in mind, that man has been here on the planet for several thousand years, and we have been dealing with cancer, heart attack, stroke, measles and mumps and rubella, all of the diseases that you're so fearful of and that cost so much when you go to the hospital, have been dealt with and dealt with successfully over the last 5,000 years. Now, we here in the Western world are attached to a process called allopathic medicine, and it isn't all that bad. I mean, it's got some good points to it. And I don't deny it. For instance, in cancer therapy, allopathic medicine can cure cancer 37% of the time. And a classic example is a kid by the name of Vance Armstrong. I believe his name is a bicycle rider, got cancer. He went the cut, burn, and poison route, cured his cancer. Then he went on to win several championships riding bicycle. But it only works 37% of the time. Now, 63% of the time, that is, you take 100 people with cancer, 37 of them can be cured by the conventional cut, burn, and poison modality, and 63% die. And it's that 63% that I would like to suggest to you. You may find yourself in that 63% at some point in time. And if that happens, don't give up and say, oh, I'm lost. There's a remedy here, and it's called natural home remedies. And I picked one yesterday. We were talking about tobacco. And one of the reasons that people are having such a hard time kicking the tobacco habit is because tobacco is an addictive drug, and it causes symptoms called cravings. That's when the nicotine reaches a lower point in your body metabolism, and your body cries out and says, more nicotine, more nicotine. And so you smoke another cigarette, build up your nicotine level again, and you're satisfied. Well, now, when you go to kick the habit, it's tough because for about 3 to 5 days, you're going to have these intense cravings, and they just drive you nuts. I mean, it's like an itch that you can't scratch. And I've been through it, and so has millions of other people, and so if you're one of those. Now, I pointed out to you yesterday that there are some foods that we eat, like mustard, spices, pepper, vinegar, ketchup, hot sauce, chili, and horseradish, that increase your cravings. Now, nobody tells you that, see. They want to sell you this Nicoderm patch, or they want to sell you this or that product over there, but they don't tell you that at the same time that you're doing this therapy, you are increasing your cravings for this drug by eating certain foods. And so this guy comes along and says, well, let me point this out to you, that if you would stop eating things like mustard, spices, pepper, vinegar, ketchup, hot sauce, chili, and horseradish a week or two before you plan to quit smoking, quit cold turkey, your cravings will be much less and your chances of success much greater. And that's special. All right, now that's past tense. Now, he's got an article in here on drinking, and I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. It's about 3 or 4 pages. So let's take a look at this thing of alcohol, because alcoholism is probably worse than smoking. Now, if you're an alcoholic, there are institutions out there like Alcoholics Anonymous. You can go to the doctor. You can get on Social Security Disability, and there's sanitariums out there. You can actually check into a sanitarium. They'll dry you out. When you come out, you're going to be off the sauce. But once you develop alcoholism, you're going to be an alcoholic for the rest of your life. An alcoholic is someone who is susceptible to alcohol, and an alcoholic may be a guy that hasn't had a drink for 30 years, but he's still an alcoholic. And if that guy ever gets off the wagon, gets drunk a couple of times, you know, he'll be right back on the sauce, won't be able to give it up again. So it's an ongoing problem. It's like cancer. You know, once you get cancer, you're going to have cancer in your body forever. And you're going to be treating that cancer forever. My wife's had it for 30 years. She's treating it every day. And she has to stay on her therapy and regimen. But she's a 30-year cancer survivor, not just a 5-year cancer survivor. And she's free of cancer, but it's in her body. And if she gets off the therapy, then it's going to come back with a vengeance and maybe kill her. And so alcoholism works the same way. Now, let's take a look at alcoholism and alcohol here. First, read over the preceding section on how to quit tobacco. And many of the same principles apply to alcohol. So let's not repeat many of them here. First of all, accept the fact that you have an alcohol problem. Many people refuse to accept that simple fact, so they continue on with the problem. Now, you know the situation already. Drinking alcohol shortens your lifespan dramatically. The death records of 2 million policyholders in 43 American life insurance companies for a 20-year period were summarized. People drinking 2 glasses of beer or 1 glass of whiskey per day were 18% more likely to die than the average American. Among those using over 2 glasses of beer or 1 glass of whiskey daily, the death rate was 86% higher. Now, that's not very much. You know, that's just you're drinking 1 glass. Now, I don't know how much or how many ounces are in this glass of whiskey per day. If you were to measure 2 glasses of beer, that's about 2 drinks. So 2 shot glasses of whiskey a day is what I think they're trying to convey here. But get this, if you drink more than these 2 shots of whiskey a day, or more than 2 bottles of beer a day, and you do this regular, you know, day in, day out, your chances are almost 100% greater, double what the average Joe six-pack faces. Now, if you want to live to be 70 years old, overindulgence in alcohol is not the way to do that. Now, I'm not here on a crusade to get you to give up booze so that you can give your heart to Jesus and go to heaven. That's not our motivation here. But there are people out there that are drinking and don't know quite how to stop. And so if you're one of those, we'll listen on and show you how to do that. You're not the only guy out there that's ever been on the sauce. And you can get off of it just like millions of other people have. Just takes a little education here, just a little bit of information, and I think you can do it. So one of the things we do is motivate people, and we tell you this drinking can kill you. Now, the Bible is not opposed to drinking. I mean, if you thought that this is some kind of an evangelistic tirade here, not at all. In Deuteronomy 14, just to give you an illustration, at the feasts, particularly the Feast of Tabernacles, here in Deuteronomy 14, God tells you that strong drink is a part and parcel with the program. And in verse 26, you shall bestow that money for whatsoever your soul lusts after, for oxen, for sheep, for wine, or for strong drink, or whatever else your soul desires. And you shall eat there before the eternal your God, and you shall rejoice, and you and your household. So going out and having a few drinks is fine. No problem with that. But alcoholism is a little bit different cats, a little bit different breed in the program. That's where you're a consistent drinker and you drink day in and day out, each and every day, without any respite. So if you're drinking every day, every day, every day, you're an alcoholic. Now, drinking from time to time, you know, is fine. If you're a binge drinker, like a lot of these college kids, they want to go out here and they want to down a bottle of whiskey. You know, they've got their heads up the wrong end. They're not educated in drinking. And in the Reader's Digest, you'll read about these binge drinkers, and they drink until they kill themselves. And it happens every once in a while. And that's the parents' fault. The parents never taught this kid how to drink. My dad sat me down at age 12 and said, let me show you how to drink, son. My dad was a drinker. He didn't have a problem drinking. He wasn't an alcoholic. He wasn't drunk all the time. He wasn't drinking all the time. He didn't drink booze every day. But, you know, when they had a party, you had guests and they had company over, you know, they'd break out a bottle and have a few drinks. Now, in the case here of the scripture, you know, wine is good for you. In fact, it tells you to drink a little wine for your stomach's sake. Medical studies have shown that there is a red pigment in wine skin that actually is a nutritive that you need and is good for you. In fact, the people in Italy and France drink a lot, or they eat a lot more fat and richer foods than we Americans do, and have a lot lower level of heart disease and stroke in France and in Italy than we have in the United States. They have a poorer diet when it comes to saturated fat. They eat a whole lot more of it and have less heart trouble. Now, why is that? They drink a lot of wine. So I'm not here to tell you how much you should drink or how much you shouldn't drink, but when you get to a point where you've got to have booze every day, you got a problem and it needs to be addressed. So here in the home remedies, they've got a home remedy here for you. Well, here's how you quit. And I think it's worth the $85. If you didn't get anything else out of the book, then you quit smoking. It was worth the $85. If you could just get off the sauce, it would be worth the $85. And that's just 4 pages out of 600. And I'll give you some more as we progress along. So in quitting the alcohol, first thing is motivation. If you're drinking 2 glasses of beer or 2 shots of whiskey a day, you're 18% more likely to die than the average American. If you're drinking more than that, it's 86%. So if you want to live longer, get off the sauce. Alcohol produces cirrhosis of the liver, and it's progressive and leads to death. It lowers resistance to disease, especially pneumonia. Chronic alcoholism leads to mental disease. A study of 56,000 patients in Massachusetts revealed that 1/5 of all admissions were alcoholics. Alcohol is not a food, and it can neither nourish nor strengthen the body. It seems to warn you, but that is only because blood is being drawn from the internal organs to the surface. Alcohol dries out brain cells, and over a period of time, more cells keep being destroyed. How well do you want your mind to work when you get to be 70 years old? Alcoholics tend to need friends. Find a friend or several of them, part of AA, Alcohol Anonymous, and their success is the weekly group meetings plus the fact that everyone has someone that he can phone when he needs to. Well, in a 1967 experiment by UD Register MD at the Loma Linda University Hospital in California, he found that rats, when they were fed junk food, wanted to drink diluted alcohol instead of water. So when he added coffee to their diet, their alcohol intake increased greatly. When they were switched over to an exclusively nutritious diet, nearly all of the rats quit the alcohol entirely and returned to drinking water. Okay, so let's learn a lesson here. You have a craving for alcohol. They've discovered that if you've got a shortage of nutrients in your body, in other words, if you're in a starvation mode, then you're going to have a craving for alcohol. So you drink and it feels good. And so you drink more and it feels better. So you drink some more. Over a period of time, just like the nicotine, the alcohol builds a resistance in your body, and your body says, I'm now addicted and I've got to have more alcohol. So to get off the sauce, we need to change your diet and feed you so that you've got nutrients in your body and your cravings will drop off. It's just that simple. It's nutritional. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous, to my knowledge, doesn't concentrate very much on nutrition. They don't have the answer to the riddle. They're saying, well, you got to get off the sauce, so quit drinking. But, when you have a craving, you have a desire, you know, you have something that you need, you'll find this with foods. For instance, let's suppose that you're deficient in vitamin C. Do you ever notice how good oranges taste? I mean, you sit there and you peel an orange and you eat one, maybe peel a second one, you eat a second one. And I get on pomegranates like that. And this is pomegranate season right now, and I bought 20 pomegranates the other day. I like them, number one. But after I eat about 20 pomegranates, you know, I eat one a day. And so for about 20 or 30 days now, I'm going to, while they're available in the stores, I'm going to buy pomegranates. And pretty soon, my wife is going to say, would you like a pomegranate? And I'm going to gag, and I'm going to say, no, I don't want a pomegranate. Get those things out of here. I'm tired of them. Well, that's because the nutrients that are contained in the pomegranate, the reason they taste good is because you're deficient in that nutrient. So you eat one, God, that really tasted good. I'll eat a second one. And then you eat a second one, a third one, a fifth one. Pretty soon, your body builds up these nutrients. When your body builds these nutrients up, they become distasteful. Now you don't want them anymore. And that's what these rat experiments are showing us. When your body is nutritionally deficient, and your body is craving these nutrients, the alcohol and the tobacco, the caffeine, fills that void, makes you feel real good. So here you are, you're deficient, let's say, in vitamin C. So you smoke a cigarette, makes you feel good. You're deficient in vitamin C. You drink a cup of coffee, you drink a Coca-Cola, makes you feel good. But you got to have more of it. You got to have more of it. You got to have more of it. So you have gone to work here satisfying the cravings of your body by filling it in with 3 toxins, alcohol, caffeine, or nicotine, that makes your body say, hey, that feels good and I like that, and it satisfies your craving. But the underlying problem is the nutritional deficiency. That's all you're really dealing with there is nutritional deficiency. Here's why you're fat. You sit down, you know, you're hungry, so you want to eat. And so, well, what tastes real good? Sugar. Sugar, salt, nicotine, caffeine, and alcohol all taste good. So you sit down and you eat some ding-dongs and piece of pie and, you know, and you're eating a lot of calories, but you're not getting nutrients. The thing that shuts off your craving for food, the thing that makes you full, are the minerals in the food. The minerals in the food is what shuts off your appetite. If you want to test this, let me show you how to do that. Next time you have a craving for a banana, sit down and eat one banana. And that'll taste pretty good, and you'll say, well, that was really pretty good. Now, force yourself to eat a second one. I mean, you probably don't want to eat a second one, but I'm just telling you, we're going to test this. Eat a second one. Now, your body is going to be so full of micronutrients that it says, I'm full, I don't want any more bananas. Okay, but we're not going to stop. We're going to eat a third banana. Go ahead, eat a third one. Force yourself to eat. I don't believe that you can eat three bananas. I can't eat three bananas. I eat one, that's plenty. And if I went ahead and ate a second one, boy, let me tell you, by the time I got the second one down, that'd be it. If I ate the third one, I'd puke. And so will you. When you put too much into your body, you will puke. You'll vomit it out. When you overload your body with food, you regurgitate. All right. Now, your micronutrients, things like copper and iron and magnesium and et cetera, those 92 of these elements that you need. There's 16 amino acids, and I think there's about 16 or 18 vitamins, and 50-some micronutrients, you know, minerals that you need. And if you don't have all of those, you develop some symptoms, and you develop cravings. And the craving isn't satisfied necessarily by eating iron or copper or vitamin A or vitamin B. It can be satisfied with alcohol, tobacco, and nicotine or caffeine. So when you take these three toxins, now it isn't that the caffeine is necessarily bad for you. You know, in moderation, I think you could drink a little coffee and it isn't going to kill you. A little alcohol isn't going to kill you. We see that in the Bible, that you can drink a little alcohol. But it's the excess. This is what our problem is. A little bit, it goes a long way. But boy, when it tastes good and you don't have any natural shutoff valve. So you drink alcohol and you keep drinking the alcohol because you have this craving for alcohol until you're passed out drunk under the table. Or you smoke, you know, and then you're satisfied. And then you have to keep up the satisfaction by smoking a cigarette every hour. And this nicotine then takes the place of these micronutrients. And so what they found here in the studies is very simple. You put the rats on a good, nutritious diet, and they'll give up the alcohol. They don't have a craving for that anymore, and they'll go back to the water. Well, does that work for human beings? And the answer is yeah. That's the way you do that. Now, I understand your craving here, partner, because I'm an old-timey drinker, see? And I'm an old-timey smoker. And I used to drink a lot of coffee. I drove truck for a number of years, and, you know, like any other truck driver, I have to stay awake at 2 o'clock in the morning. And in order to stay awake at 2 o'clock in the morning, you got to have something like No-Doze, which is a pill that you take with a lot of caffeine, huh? Or you can drink a lot of coffee, which is what I used to do, drink a lot of coffee. Then, does it keep you awake? You bet. It keeps you awake so that you can get to the next destination. Then when you get there, you need to sleep. But you can't sleep because you're wired, you know? And so your body gets out of whack. And when your body's out of whack, you're not sleeping correctly. Pretty soon you start putting on weight. Why are you putting on weight? You're putting on weight because you're eating the wrong stuff. You're not getting the nutrients that you need. So you keep eating and eating and eating. You're hungry. I mean, I understand that. You're hungry. So you eat. And then after you eat, you're full, and it lasts for a little while, and then you get hungry again. And the guy that's obese, the guy that's overweight, you know, the guy that can't control his appetite, he's suffering from hunger. The guy's hungry because he doesn't have the nutrients in his stomach that says, okay, I've got everything I need. Shut it off. And that's what happens when you eat a banana. The banana has so much potassium in it. When you eat one banana, that's usually enough. You eat a second banana, now you've overloaded on potassium. You eat that third banana, you're going to start puking. And that's because the potassium in your stomach reaches such a level, it says, shut it off, shut it off, shut it off. But you don't. You force yourself to eat. And that's what happens. Sometimes things taste so good. I remember I did this on strawberry ice cream one time. Kind of tasted so good. I just kept eating and eating and eating. By the time I ate enough of it, I vomited it all up because I ate too much. And what's going on here is that your stomach doesn't say, shut it off, shut it off. That's because there's no nutritional value in the ice cream. You can just sit there and eat that crap until hell freezes over. You can eat York peppermint patties until the sun comes up in the morning. And that's because there's no nutritional value in it. Of course, it tastes good, so you want more of them. Well, if you eat enough of it, you know, you'll vomit. All right, so now we learn a lesson here. Very scientific. It's been tested, and we know how to do that. If you go to Alcohol Anonymous and you sign up and you say, hey, I'm an alcoholic, I need a little help here to get off the sauce, they can probably give you a better program than I can, but I just wanted to point out that there's a natural home remedy for getting off alcohol, and it's contained here in the book. I'm not going to read the whole story to you. If it isn't worth $85 to get off the sauce, then keep the $85. Go down to the liquor store and buy yourself 4 or 5 bottles of Jack Daniels. I'll keep you drunk for a month or so, and then, you know, forget you ever heard this. But if you want to get off the sauce, the $85 that you're going to spend on the book is chicken feed compared to what you're going to spend on the booze. The tobacco now, by the way, I saw this the other day. I think it was on sale. Did I see Marlboro cigarettes on sale for $39.95 at Walmart the other day? $39.95 for 10 packs. That's $3.90 a pack where we are here. I have guys that tell me they're over $5 in Canada. Well, that's $50 a carton. You know, and how long does it take to smoke a carton? A pack a day is 3 cartons a month. So if you're smoking, you know, a pack a day, you're spending $40, that's $4 a pack. You know, that's that's $120 a month. So the book costs $85, and I'm pretty sure that if you follow this regimen here, I think you can get off tobacco. In other words, you can get off tobacco easier than I got off of it when I did it, because I didn't know some of these little tricks in here. And had I known it, it would have made it a lot easier. I just made it a lot harder. I did it anyway, and it was tougher than it needed to be. Same thing here with alcohol and so on. Now, bottom line to this is, it would be better. I know people will say that it would be better if you never started smoking. It would be better if you never started drinking. Well, that's wishful thinking. Hell, nobody's going to do that. You want to send your kid off to college, and as soon as your kid hits college, everybody there is going to be badgering him to start smoking if he doesn't smoke, to start smoking, and to start drinking. So the time to teach this kid about drinking and smoking is when he's at home. My dad sat me down. He said, now you're going to start smoking. Let me explain to you how this works. And he taught me how to smoke. And sure enough, I went out and I started smoking, and I smoked for 9 years. And one day I woke up and said, no, I think I'll quit. Same thing with drinking. My dad sat me down. I said, let me explain this drinking to you. Somebody's going to challenge you, and they're going to say, drink this whole bottle of Jack Daniels. And he said, if you can get this whole bottle of Jack Daniels down before you pass out, you will die from alcohol poisoning. It's called binge drinking. And this is exactly what they're doing in college, and they're out here binge drinking. Now, ordinarily, if you sat down and you started drinking, and you had a bottle, that's a fifth of Jack Daniels, that's 4/5 of a quart, you will pass out drunk before you get to the halfway point in the bottle. And that's a natural protection, because when you're passed out drunk, you're going to quit drinking, and then you'll recover from it. But once in a while, you'll get some kid, he drinks fast enough, he can get the whole quart down before he passes out, and then that kid's going to die from alcohol poisoning because his liver can't handle it. Now, parents, you know, they're good. You know, they want their children not to drink. Say, don't drink, don't drink. You'll go to hell if you drink. As if, you know, the fear of hell is gonna change anybody's opinion here. And so the kid is ignorant about drinking. He does not understand that this alcohol is poison and that it's going to kill him if he can get the whole fifth down. And I was challenged. I was challenged. But my dad had explained that to me in advance. So when I met the challenge, I said, well, I don't think I can drink this whole bottle of Jack Daniels. And if I could, it would kill me. So I'm not going to drink it. But why don't you do it, David? Hey, Ed, why don't you do it? Show me how tough you are. Show me what a great drinker you are. See? And everybody wants to be like John Wayne said, I want to drink the whole bottle of whiskey. All right, so now the religious people, see, they don't want to teach their children how to drink, don't want to teach them how to drink and smoke or act responsibly with them. You know, coffee and nicotine and alcohol, these are powerful drugs, and in moderation, you know, they're probably fine. But we don't teach our children to drink in moderation. And truck drivers do not drink coffee in moderation. That is not the way truckers live their lives. And as a result of that, their metabolism gets screwed up, and then as they get older, they get fatter. You take a look at half these truck drivers getting out of the truck. It's a good thing they're driving the truck, because they're not physically fit for anything else. But that's all they can do, just sit there and drive that truck, because if that guy had to unload that truck, I think it'd kill him. Fortunately, they've got a contract with the Teamsters Union. All right, so there's a story on alcohol. There's a story on how to get off this stuff. You know, there's a logical way to do that. The book is $85. Let me give you the title again. It's called Natural Remedies Encyclopedia by Vance Ferrell. The guy's name is F-E-R-R-E-L-L, Vance Ferrell. And you can get the book from heirloomseeds.com, also known as Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds in Mansfield, Missouri. Or if you're online, go to heirloom, H-E-I-R-L-O-O-M, seeds, S-E-E-D-S.com. I believe it's all one word. And that'll get you to their website, and you can order the book, and they'll ship it to you. You'll probably have to pay them up front. Tell them how much they want, because there may be sales tax or a couple of odds and ends. They might actually charge you for the shipping, you know, another $10 for the shipping. I don't know. I bought it out of their store. It was $85. Mark right in the book. $85. Hey, let me give you a reminder here at the midway point. We are you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and there's about 4,000 of them. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. The other day I got a letter in here, it's an email, and the guy said, "You're going right straight to hell." I get letters like that every once in a while. The guy tells me I'm going to go to hell. And he went on to explain, he said, "Now you've got an ex-living spouse and your wife has an ex-living spouse. That's adultery. Adultery is punishable by death, and you are going to die." And I'm sure that the guy that sent that to me is very sincere, and I wanted to thank you, sir, for having sent me that letter. And the reason that I'm doing that is, number one, you're wrong and you got your head up your rectum, and then you don't know what you're talking about. That's number one. But I appreciate your thought, and I appreciate your concern, because here's a guy that actually took the time to sit down and write me a letter and point me in the right direction. He said, you know, I don't know what the right direction is, but he didn't go that far. I'm getting ahead of myself here. He actually didn't tell me the solution to my problem, but I guess the solution to my problem is to put my head between my knees and kiss her goodbye, because I've already done the act, so I guess the penalty is. Now, there's a caveat to that, so let me point that out as we're going through this book here, because I want to point out something to you. Oftentimes, we have an opinion about something, and it's dead wrong, but we believe that it's true, and I'm sure that this man is very sincere, and he believes that adultery will get you thrown into hellfire, and he's not too far astray there. It isn't quite that bad. It's bad. It's going to get you killed. That's what's going to happen. Then you come up in a resurrection. And then God's going to ask you in this judgment, you're going to say, "Well, did you learn anything from that?" And I'm sure he's going to ask me, "Well, Gordon, did you learn anything from that?" "Well, I learned a lot." The answer to this adultery thing over here is contained in the Old Testament. It's in Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. It's the divorce statute. If you want to divorce your wife, you can do that, sir. I'm well aware that that isn't God's intention. He didn't start off with that intention, but it developed that way, and so we have a statutory authority for divorcing our spouses. And that's where it's contained. It's Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. Just a little blurb there. It only appears one time in Scripture. So if you want a divorce, and I think I followed that statute, so I think I'm safe. So if you've been concerned about me going to hell because I've got a living spouse, that's fine. Now, the reason I point this out to you is because we have opinions, all of us do. But your opinions don't necessarily reflect upon reality. It may be true, and it may be false. And much of what all of us believe is false. For instance, I had a class in here some time back, and I do this pretty often, but I had a class and there were 6 people in here, and with me in here, that's 7. And I asked the question, I said, "How many of you people in here are pathological liars?" And one guy at the end of the table, who'd been to school here before, raised his hand. The other 5 people are sitting there looking at me, and so I raised my hand. Now there's 2 of us. I said, "Now look around the room." And they looked at this guy. He's got his hand up, and I've got my hand up. And I said, "Now, here are 2 of us in the room that have our hands up, and we are declaring that we are pathological liars. But I see that the other 5 of you, good folks that you are not liars. God love you." And these people are, you know, they're sitting there wondering, "Well, what in the hell is this guy up to?" And so the guy at the end over there, I said, "Sir, I see you had your hand up when I asked you if you're a pathological liar. And I said, why are you a pathological liar? And he said, I was designed that way. I'm built and designed to be a liar. Kind of like a Doberman pincher, you know. He just built and designed to kill. He just trained to kill her. So I said to the other five people, I said, well, now, would you reconsider your position? Could it be that you people, too, are pathological liars, but you just don't want to admit it? And the other five people, they kind of looked at each other like, no, I don't think I want to admit that I'm a liar. So I went through my drill, and I said, well, you five people, let me ask you this. Have any of you five people ever told a lie at any time in your life, past tense? And all of them, you know, looked around at each other, and they looked at me, and they nodded their heads, yeah. So I said, then you don't deny that you have at least one time in your life told a lie, and you know that you told a lie, and you remember that it was a lie, don't you? And they all said, well, yeah, that's true. We passed tense way back, a long time ago, one time in my life, I might have told a little white lie. And yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I said, let me ask you this. Do you think that before you die, no matter how old you are today, that before you die, you might tell one more little white lie, just one, now, before you die, future tense? And all five of them conceded that in all probability, that before they died, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 20, 50 years from now, I will probably lie one more time. And that'll be two lies in my lifetime. Not exactly pathological, but at least it's an admission, isn't it? So I said, well, now let me wrap this up. And let me suggest to you that maybe in the last week or two, just think back, have you told a lie within the last week or two? Something fairly current. Everybody admitted that, well, yeah, probably in the last week or two I have told one little white lie. And I said, well, then, out of your own mouths, then, you have confessed to being a liar past tense, a liar future tense, and a liar present tense, haven't you? And I said, now, is it pathological, or do you just lie because it's fun or feels good like sex? Now, I use that as a little example here, because oftentimes people will have beliefs in their minds, in their brains, that they have received maybe way back when they were in catechism, you know, when we were all sitting around the preacher there as he was explaining how the Bible works and so on. Remember that catechism? You were going to confirmation class, and they were explaining to you the doctrines of the church and how it was that you had to conform. And they told you how bad liars were and how we were not liars. Unable to face the fact that as a matter of your design mechanism, 25% of everything that comes out of your mouth is false. Well, then that means that 25% of everything that's in your brain is false. So since that's the case, then what do we do to get that false out? Well, isn't that education? I mean, don't you at some point in time have to take a look at some piece of information that maybe you've never heard before and then consider that? Now, in the Scripture, God says, let God be true, though every man be found a liar. Let God be true, though every man... You get that word every, the operational word, every man. You got about 7 billion of us now on planet Earth, 7 billion men alive on planet Earth. It says, every man be a liar. So I didn't write that. I'm just passing on information that I got from the Creator, and he said, every man on planet Earth is a liar. So I looked at that, and I said, well, it would occur to me that the 6 students that I've got here in class are probably liars. And I'm one of them. I'm the teacher, and I'm one of them, and I'm a liar. And I've lied in the past. I lied recently, and I'm going to lie again before I die. So I'm a liar. And so as a result of that, you know, just looking at it pragmatically, if you can admit that you're a liar, you can admit that you're an alcoholic, you can admit that you're a smoker, you can, you know, you got to face reality. The reality of it is that we all lie and that we're all liars. So now they take you into court, see, and they tell you, raise your right hand and repeat after me. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? And you do. You raise your hand and you say, I do. Now, unaware that in the Bible there are 2 scriptures in here. Actually, there's more than that. There's 3 or 4, but there's 2 in the New Testament. In James 5:12 and in Matthew 5:33-37, it tells you, don't take these oaths. Don't swear to tell the truth. Did you know that? The Bible tells you not to do that. Now, I'm not here to persuade you that you should or shouldn't take an oath. That's another subject for another day. I just wanted to point out that it's common, and that's what people expect you to do. And you're expected to tell the truth. We expect that of you. Kind of like throwing a piece of meat down in front of a Doberman pincher and telling him, just sniff it, Fido. Don't eat it. Just sniff it. Well, he's going to inhale it. He just grab that, throw it up in the air, grab it, and swallow it, pull. And that's because that's what he's designed to do. That's just the way the thing comes out. It's what makes it pathological. It's natural and normal. Now, what we're trying to do is overcome that. You know what I mean? We're trying to build character. We're trying to get to a point where we lie less and less. We'd like to get to the point where we don't lie at all, but I'm not fully persuaded that's ever going to happen. Now, when we're talking about human beings and the way they behave, you know, it would be good if you never started smoking and you never started drinking and you ate healthy and nutritionally and you didn't eat Hostess ding-dongs and Twinkies and so on. That would all be great. But that isn't going to happen. You people aren't going to eat healthy, nutritious diets. You're not going to abstain from alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, and gasoline, and all the rest. That's because it's fun. It's pleasurable. We like to do it. And we're going to do that. Now, there are consequences that come from it. And so that's what I'm angling at here. When these consequences come to pass, when you come down with venereal disease because you've been down to the whorehouse, and I want to point out that 25% now listen up now, pay attention, 25% of the Americans between the ages of 12 and 25, in that 12-year period there, 12 to 25, your teenage years or early adult years, 25% of these Americans have a sexually transmitted disease. They're called STDs, 25%. Yes, it would be true. It would be good. It would be wonderful if these young people had been taught, thou shalt not commit adultery, don't practice fornication, maintain your virginity until you're married. That would all be well and good, and I don't deny it, but it ain't going to happen. Ain't going to happen. So you're going to come down with a sexually transmitted disease. Now, fortunately, here in the Western world, we have allopathic medicine. They get, you know, penicillin and dihydrostreptomycin and terramycin and so on. And they can effectively treat that. Now, there are some of these diseases, like AIDS, that are not very amenable to treatment. But there are some natural home remedies over here that are. They are. And I know that's pretty hard for you to believe. You know, if you're an average Joe Sixpack, you know, you've been to the university, you've been to school, high school. And they told you, no, these diseases are incurable. There's no cure for cancer, heart attack, stroke, muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, diabetes. No cure for those diseases. They're all incurable. That's a lie. That's not true. There are cures. You just don't know what they are. Now, I just thought that I would point that out to you, that there are some people out there that can actually cure some of these diseases, 14 cures to cancer. I mentioned that a time or two. In fact, I've done a number of programs on that. If you go look up cancer in my archives there, you'll find that there's a bunch of them. Now, I'm not here. I don't get paid for curing cancer. I don't get paid for converting people from alcoholic to non-alcoholic. Remember, our motivation here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review is to pass on information. This is an information program. And if it helps you, fine. And if it doesn't help you, well, then we'll pass. No hard feelings there. Now, as time progresses along in life, especially when you're 19 to 30, this is the period in your lifetime when you have eternal life. There isn't anybody age 19 to 30 that believes that he can die. And that doesn't happen. That's why these people are doing all of these crazy stunts, like bungee jumping off of bridges and flying airplanes under power lines and bridges and doing all these crazy things, you know, jumping out of airplanes, you know, with parachutes and stuff. And that's because they believe. Now, when you get to be about 30, you'll start sobering up. And you're like a drunk, you know, you're not quite in your right mind. But about age 30 now, you're going to start getting good sense. This is why in the scripture that priests don't take the priesthood until they're 30. And that's because your mental faculties don't fully develop until age 30. Did you know that? So when you're age 18, 20, 25, you know, you think you're pretty smart. And then you are. You know, you're smarter than a baboon, a chimpanzee. But you're not as smart as you're going to be when you get to be age 30. Then when you get to be 40, you're going to be smarter than you were at age 30. At age 50, you're going to be smarter than you were at age 40. At age 60, you're going to be smarter than you were at age 50. And the older you get, the smarter you get, and the wiser you get, because now you've got some real experience. Now, some people don't ever wise up. You know, some people suffer from the terminal stupids, you know, for a long, long time, well past middle age. But in most cases, about age 30, you're going to start wising up. And as you get wiser, as you get smarter, as you develop more and more information between your ears, more and more information in your computer, you'll be able to use that information, and you'll be able to use that information more productively as you progress along. So young people up to about the age of 30, very, very difficult to get those people to listen to reason, logic, and common sense. They have to be advanced. From age 30 to 40, you can get them to listen, but you can't get them to act. Age 40 to 50, those people are more willing to act, but they're not really convinced or convicted. About age 50 to 60, that's about the period in your lifetime that you're going to wake up to reality. So that's been my experience. I'm just passing that on to you. Now, those of you who are in your 50s and 60s now, you have already drank and smoked. You've already screwed up your body. It's past tense, partner. Now, you're the guy that needs the book. That's because you got to have a solution to the problem. And when you go to the medical doctor, he's oftentimes going to say, oh, you got diabetes. The solution is insulin. Here, let me give you a prescription. You want to avoid taking that insulin, because once your pancreas gets to the point where you're shoving insulin into your body, your pancreas shuts down. Now, your pancreas is unable to keep up with the demands put upon it. So if you'll quit doing those things that cause diabetes, then your body, your immune system, and your body will straighten itself out. And that's what's pointed out here in this book. It's called Natural Home Remedies. These natural remedies now will help you get off the sauce, get off the tobacco, You've got an aneurysm. You've got a weak blood vessel in your body. Do you know what causes that? Copper deficiency. Vitamin C and copper deficiency is what's causing it. You're pregnant and you're going to have a baby. Well, that baby is going to be fully developed in 56 days. Did you know that? From conception to 56 days. And then at the 56th day, something happens. And then there's a story in here, in this book here, which deals with the pregnant women. And I think they call that a protoplast. Protoplast, I think, is the name for that. And this fetus is developing for 56 days in geometric progression. I mean, it's doubling every day. It doubles every day. And if it kept doing that like cancer does, it'd kill you. But in this case, on the 56th day, thank God for evolution, huh? On the 56th day, it quits doing that, and then it grows arithmetically. But it's fully developed and fully formed. If you're missing, you pregnant women, if you're missing zinc on the particular day that the palate closes, your baby will be born with hair lip, cleft palate. Zinc deficiency, that's what causes that. Now, if nothing else happened for $85, you could read that zinc deficiency page here in Natural Home Remedies and avoid having a baby born with a cleft palate. That was $85 well spent. You aren't going to be able to pay the hospital bill for $85 now to close that palate up. There's a cure for it. I mean, there's surgery. I mean, they can fix that. God bless allopathic medicine now because they can fix that. But I'm telling you, for $85, if you could avoid that by just taking a little zinc, well, you'd save a lot of people a lot of time, effort, and energy. That's the value of the book. It's called Home Remedies. Heirloomseeds.com is the place you get it. Got that? Heirloomseeds.com. And it's called Home Remedies. Home Remedies Encyclopedia. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. That's the signal. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.